over the next couple months, we'll probably see some stabilization in the unemployment rate, meaning it might tick up, but nowhere near as dramatically as it has. This is going to be with us for another year and a half to 2 years.
Hi, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. Thanks so much for listening to the WAMC News Podcast, and on today's episode, we're speaking with Aaron Pasitti, Associate Professor of Economics at Siena College, about the latest unemployment numbers released Friday morning. Hi, Aaron. What should we know about the new numbers, which are very alarming?
These are extremely alarming, and this is by far the worst jobs report the country has seen since the Great Depression. Just in terms of the speed with which the unemployment rate increased, and how wide the effects of this increase have been are extremely alarming and pose a handful of challenges for the U.S. economy going forward. In just 1 month, the U.S. economy lost 20.5 million jobs. That's the worst since the Great Depression. It's erased all of the job gains over the last 10 years, and the unemployment rate shot up to 14.7%, which is, again, the highest it's been since the Great Depression. This has affected every sector of the U.S. economy. So it's not just isolated in, you know, food service, travel, and tourism. Obviously, that's been the most affected sector, but this has affected literally every sector, including healthcare, professional and business services, retail, manufacturing, you name it.
Does the fact that we went from effectively full employment, you know, one of the lowest unemployment rates on record, to having something like 15% unemployment this quickly, tell us something about the nature of jobs that Americans have?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The speed with which we went from, you know, essentially a 50-year low in unemployment to an 80-year high in unemployment shows, one, how severe the effect of the pandemic has been in terms of just shutting down the U.S. economy for all intents and purposes. And this is absolutely going to change the nature of the types of jobs that Americans hold going forward. You know, a lot of what you could call lower skill, lower wage jobs were the first to be lost. But now we're starting to see the loss of, you know, better paying, higher skilled jobs, you know, healthcare, you know, business services, and so on. And the question that every economist, and I think everyone has in their mind is, you know, are these jobs going to come back? How fast are they going to come back? So this is definitely going to change the composition of the types of jobs that Americans have going forward. But unfortunately, nobody knows the answer to the question of what types of jobs are we going to have once the economy recovers?
Okay, how does this compare with what we saw during the Great Recession of about a decade ago?
You know, the Great Recession seems like kid's play relative to this. You know, during the Great Recession, during the financial crisis of 2008, and the recession lasted until 2009, you know, the unemployment rate slowly crept up to 10.1%, and then it had a very slow decrease where the economy got all of the jobs that it lost back somewhere around 2015. So the fact that this happened so dramatically, meaning the fact that it happened so rapidly, but also that it's 50% higher than the unemployment rate during the Great Recession, really sends a strong signal to policymakers that they need to do something because this is unheard of.
Let's talk more about that in a minute, but table it for a moment. Just a general question here about how the economy works. If we do lift restrictions on, you know, the types of places that can be open, if places start reopening, restaurants, you know, bars, salons, and so on, which, you know, could happen on a phased-in basis, won't a lot of these jobs come back?
That's an excellent question, and we're about to find out the answer probably in another couple weeks or a month. My gut tells me no. And the reason why is just because businesses reopen, whether it's because a state allows it or it's done from the federal level, doesn't mean consumers are going to go into those stores and go shopping. I think it's very unlikely, and preliminary data from a lot of the states that have reopened their economy suggest that consumer demand isn't picking up just because businesses are open. People very rightly have health concerns about, you know, going out and shopping or going to a restaurant. So people's behavior, I think, has dramatically changed for the foreseeable future. So the fact that, you know, some states have allowed businesses to reopen does not mean that people are going to go shopping. And if people aren't going shopping, those businesses are going to find themselves having to lay off the workers they hired back, you know, in a couple weeks or a couple months. I think what we're going to see is probably a very, economists call it a W-shaped recovery, where you're going to have a steep fall, which we're in the middle of, and then you might have a small bounce back, and then another fall, and then a bounce back, and another fall, pretty much until a vaccine's developed, and hopefully that will give people confidence in, you know, going back out and resuming their previous shopping habits.
Okay, so let's get back to that policy question then. We know that the federal government did an initial $1,200 stimulus for most people. Those checks have arrived by and large. That's obviously not going to solve the problem of someone being out of work in the long run. So what should policymakers be doing, in your opinion?
Yeah, that's, again, another excellent question. There's two issues here. The first one is that the unemployment rate, the 14.7% unemployment rate, really understates the severity of the collapse in the labor market. The unemployment rate only counts as unemployed workers who have looked for a job in the past 4 weeks. So that excludes workers who want a job but aren't looking for a job because, you know they can't find one. Then there's workers who don't want a job because they have to care for their children, or just because they don't want to go back to work for health concerns. So the policy response has to be substantial, and, you know, probably, you know, at least double what we saw in the first round of stimulus. The other issue that policymakers need to focus on is the how long this is going to go on. So this spike up to 14.7% unemployment, that's dramatic. It's probably going to start coming down in a couple months, but the bigger threat to the economy is how long we're going to have to live with mass unemployment. And the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the unemployment rate is going to be above 10% until 2022. So we're looking at another, you know, year and a half of, you know, absolutely catastrophic unemployment levels. So the policy response has to match that. So the $1,200 stimulus checks are really a nice public relations ploy, but will do absolutely nothing to make households whole. I think to the extent policymakers want to pursue that, they should be looking at something that resembles a, you know, temporary universal basic income, where instead of a one-time $1,200 payment, they should be looking at a $2,000 payment every month to keep households financially solvent. Relief and social assistance for the unemployed, the elderly and vulnerable workers in general have to go up. So policymakers should be looking at, I mean, direct financial assistance to households on a monthly basis that allows them to buy groceries and pay rent, because the fact of the matter is, as uncomfortable as this is to say, is this can get a lot worse, and policy has the chance to make this better. But given what we're seeing at the federal level, it seems as if policymakers have no interest in direct payments to households. We're talking about tax cuts and accelerating, investment credits for firms. That's a big hand up to corporations, but it's going to do nothing to help struggling households for another year and a half.
I mean, do you think this is a time to start talking about that big infrastructure bill that keeps kicking around?
Absolutely. Now is the U.S. economy has underinvested in infrastructure for decades, and politicians love talking about it but hate doing anything about it. So we need to be thinking on New Deal terms. in terms of public works projects, whether that takes the form of infrastructure development. With so many, you know, with literally about a quarter of the workforce without a job, these people can be trained in short order to do other basic infrastructure jobs simply to provide income flow, because the longer these workers stay out of work, the less income they have, the less they'll go shopping, the more that affects solvent businesses who will then lay off workers. And this will very easily and quickly cascade into a doom loop if there's not a policy intervention. So whether it's a universal basic income, which just keeps struggling households financially solvent, is a good step to buy time. But more importantly, in terms of generating economic growth, not just in the next couple years, but for the next couple decades, is really improving the nation's infrastructure. You know, water quality, roads and bridges, rural broadband access, the list could go on and on. There's no shortage of opportunities. And it's also a perfect time to invest in infrastructure because borrowing costs for the U.S. government are at, again, historical lows. Investors are almost paying the U.S. government to borrow money from them once you account for inflation. So the fear of deficits, the fear of you know, rising debt service is wholly unfounded because the federal government can borrow at exceptionally low levels and invest that money in things that will improve the growth trajectory of the U.S. economy in the long term.
I want to talk about some of the other factors associated with having so many people out of work. I think people can understand on a personal level what it would mean to lose your job, but what other sectors of the economy in the aggregate are sort of on the cliff here if so many people are out of work?
Yeah. Given how rapidly this occurred and given how deep it is, the biggest threat is that this just overtakes the entire economy in that, you know, you kind of have the ripple effect where, you know, legal services, architecture firms, you name it, are going to be affected. So it's a substantial risk that this becomes not an isolated problem affecting sectors that have been directly hit by the pandemic, but turns into a large-scale economic issue that affects all sectors. And once that happens, it becomes very tough to turn back that tide without, you know, absolutely massive, unprecedented stimulus.
Separate from containing the virus, that's its own issue in a way, but is there something that we can learn from what other advanced economies have done when faced with the COVID-19 pandemic?
From an economic angle, I think every country is in the, you know, the same boat, at least conceptually. But I think the interesting thing, and I think the bigger concern here, is the economy is not going to improve until the course of the virus changes trajectory. People's behavior is going to be dramatically affected in that they're going to be less hesitant to assemble in large groups. They're going to be much more hesitant in, you know, going shopping. So I think the easiest way to get the economy on more certain footing is to institute, you know, absolutely, you know, unprecedented large-scale testing. Test every American, whether they have symptoms or not, every 2 weeks until this abates. You're looking at about, you know, 25 million tests a week at that point. But until we know who has the virus and where they have and where those people are located, people aren't going to have any certainty or confidence in resuming economic activity. Contact tracing, so that if people are exposed to an affected individual, they can quarantine and not put others at risk. So the, you know, the test and trace, I think, is the one thing that we can learn from other countries that can at least stop the bottom from falling out in terms of the economy. And then I think the other simple one is just wearing face masks in public more. I know masks are in short supply, but that's a very easy way to protect yourself and to protect others.
I know you're not a political scientist, so you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but you've hinted at where you think, you know, our federal response has been coming up short so far with President Trump in power. So if you were the Biden campaign or the Democrats who are trying to run a campaign 6 months out from Election Day right now, what sort of package would you be running on? I mean, what do you think their message should be in terms of an economic recovery to voters?
So I think the first step is to admit that this is an economic catastrophe and that, you know, on par with the Great Depression and depression level type policy interventions are necessary. So I think the Biden campaign should start drawing up both a, you know, a short-term recovery plan, income assistance to everyone, short-term job creation programs, but also thinking about the longer term, investing in education. These are things that the Green New Deal lays out. So that's actually a very nice policy template. So the Biden campaign, and if I can speculate here, I think is just kind of sitting back and letting Trump do himself in by saying, you know, to put it politely, stupid things, and just watching their lack of policy intervention. And that really works well for the Biden campaign, because since there's very little action on the policy front, I think Biden and his campaign should start suggesting an array of options that are conceptually thought out and can be ready to be implemented, you know, within weeks of the of Biden taking office, should that happen.
Last thing, Aaron, is there something that people individually can do to make themselves feel better, no matter what their financial situation is right now? I know, you know, a lot of people have lost jobs, but people who still are working are afraid to look at their savings accounts and their retirement accounts. Sure. They're hearing about, you know, a 5 to 10 year timeline that may have thrown their plans completely out the window. Is there, can you give us any good news?
Sure. In all seriousness, this is an absolutely unprecedented time that has caused incredible hardship, whether it's economic, you know, mental and emotional issues. So that aside, the one bright spot in the unemployment report is that about 80% of the jobs that have been lost are workers who have been put on temporary layoff, meaning at least for now, businesses expect to hire those workers back in the near future. So if you're trying to read into the psychology of that, businesses are expecting some type of rebound to happen sometime soon. And if those workers who are on temporary layoff can come back, that might be the silver lining in this. But again, I think that, you know, the recovery and the is dictated by the, you know, path and trajectory of the virus that affects people's behavior. And we need a very dramatic policy response at the federal level. So unfortunately, Ian, there is really not much people can do or look at to make themselves feel better during this time. This is absolutely horrific.
Well, we'll have a lot more time for some more depressing chats. That's Aaron Pasitti of Siena College. He's Associate Professor of Economics. Aaron, thank you for parsing the numbers with us and taking all this time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ian. I appreciate it.
All right. That does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to it. And remember, stay safe, stay inside if you can. We'll check in with you next week. I'm Ian Pickus.